Hi, everybody. Program note, barring holidays, occasional family days, we now are going to do this show every day. We think context, nuance, truth, is kind of important. We used to be a weekly, now we're going to be daily. Look for it. Truth bomb, number one. Julian Assange is not a criminal. Truth is not a crime. Is it possible the U.S. Justice Department is finally willing to accept that messaging and grant Assange his freedom? We are going to tell you about that. Truth bomb number two. The U.S. Supreme Court is threatening free speech. How? By questioning the value of the First Amendment, and you're going to hear it for yourself. Truth bomb tres. U.S. troops are boots on the ground off the coast of Taiwan. Did you know that? Once again, we must ask the question we've asked before. Are we trying to start World War III? I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. We are hearing again that there's a possibility that whistleblower Julian Assange, who has been in captivity or on the run for the better part of the last 12 years, may finally be given his freedom. Nothing confirmed. But according to the Wall Street Journal, the U.S. Justice Department is thinking about possibly reducing the charges against him to a misdemeanor. The charge would simply be mishandling classified information. If that were to happen, the man who's been in a British prison now for telling the truth would be freed. And why does this matter? It matters because while most members of the media and or our government, even to this day, still don't want to talk about the horrible things that our government did in our names, in Iraq and Afghanistan and places like that, Assange did. He did talk about those things. It was because of him that we learned that in many cases, our very compromised political leaders, some military officials, our very wealthy contractors were essentially lying to us. If not for him, we don't know. Let me give you some examples. There was a case. There was a case in Baghdad. This is 2007. Two employees of Reuters disappear. I mean, they work for a Western media company, right? One was a driver. The other was a photographer. They were both there. They were covering the story in Baghdad. WikiLeaks and others began reporting that they may have been killed by our own military. Two guys who were reporters or working as a part of the media. But our government lied to us about that from the very beginning. How do we know? Because WikiLeaks released the video, the one that I'm about to show you again. Just to remind you, on the video, you're going to see how these men, they were unarmed. They were there asking questions. They were talking to people. They were on the street. Suddenly, they're shot from the sky. From a U.S. gunship helicopter, totally unprovoked. And you will see, unfortunately, how much the men shooting them down are seeming to enjoy themselves. They joke and they laugh, you know? It almost sounds like they're playing a video game. And then you're going to see how when an ambulance shows up, it's a van that you'll see on the video. I'm telling you what you're about to see. You'll see this ambulance van, it arrives to take the men to the hospital. The soldiers in the U.S. gunship fire at the ambulance to finish them off. Here it is.
He's got a weapon, too. Hotel 26, Crazy Horse 18, have 5 to 6 individuals with AK-47s.
Light them all up.
202 traffic, 260s.
Come on, fire.
Hey, Roger. Keep shooting.
God damn it, Kyle.
All right, hit him.
Oh, yeah, look at those dead bastards. Come on, let us shoot.
You're engaged.
1-8, okay, clear.
Come on.
Clear.
Oh, yeah, look at that, right through the windshield.
The cold frequency.
This guy just drove over a body.
Yeah, they were laughing. It's not about being anti-U.S. It's not about being pro-Assange, folks. It's about being pro-truth. It's about transparency. It's about learning from our mistakes. That's all. I mean, if you watch this video, I mean, we hear the soldiers laughing when they're witnessing one of the tanks run over a body there. Do you hear that at the end? Here is how a much younger Assange, by the way, reacted to this video in an interview he did, obviously, much earlier with Al Jazeera. Here it is.
So you see these young pilots acting like they're playing video games. Only the high scores they are getting are with real human lives.
I mean, if they were doing things like that, we should have known, right? We want to know those things, if nothing else, to correct the behavior. Assange, who the Western media has called divisive, is fighting a drawn-out legal battle with the British government to avoid being extradited to the United States. If he were to be sent to the U.S., he could be tried for publishing thousands of confidential U.S. military records and diplomatic cables, which embarrassed the U.S. government. Let's call it what it is. But Assange's lawyers are now saying they are in talks. Admittedly, they are in talks to possibly come up with a resolution. According to people who are familiar at this point with the U.S. State Department and this case, there seems to be a softening in the U.S.'s previous hardline position. What exactly does that mean? Barry Pollack is the lawyer for Assange. He has said that he has been given no indication that the department will take this deal that they're talking about. The Justice Department is not commenting at this point, but we thought it was important to share this with you. If they do come up with some type of acceptable compromise, if they do, one would think it might have something to do with the public backlash that's been expressed worldwide against Assange's imprisonment, as well as the situation that's going on right now, where our government is being criticized for things like what's happening in Ukraine, what we've done in Gaza, our history in Iraq, Afghanistan. So all this comes into the picture, I think. Joining me now to talk about this is activist, professor, and lawyer Dan Kovalik, and radio host Misty Winston. She is a co-host for the Action for Assange streaming on YouTube. Dan, let me start with you. You're a lawyer. What do you make of these negotiations that are going on with the U.S. Department of Justice, and do you think they will break?
Well, we'll see. You know, Assange's wife has said that, you know, she and Julian would oppose any deal that would require him to plead guilty because they don't feel he's guilty of anything. Neither do I, of course. And the other thing is that, at least that I understand, is one of the things being floated is a deal in which he would agree, he would plead guilty and get like 14 years. That would mean he'd still have 8 years left because he's only been in jail for 5 years.
No, let's talk about the misdemeanor thing. I mean, if they give him a misdemeanor, is a slap on the hand. That's like, jaywalking, right? I mean, I would think he and his lawyers would say, you know, fine, I read some documents I probably shouldn't have looked at, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I would take the deal. I mean, he's been in jail 5 years. Before that, remember, he was holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy in London for a number of years. I mean, so he's been in captivity a long time. And according to his father, who's been visiting him, he's not in great physical or psychological shape. So, yeah, that would be good. And it needs to be pointed out, by the way, the guy's been in jail 5 years without being tried on his charges. He's not being accused of any violent crime. There's no reason he shouldn't be out on bail, or he shouldn't be under house arrest with a little bracelet on his ankle. That he's been held for 5 years without trial is an abomination, and he really shouldn't serve another day.
Talk about anti-constitutional. Misty, let me bring you into this conversation. I'm almost getting a sense that there's a lot of pressure on the U.S. government right now from people like yourself, like you and others. Not to mention everything going on geopolitically right now that puts us, I think, in a defensive position where it wouldn't look good to bring this guy in and throw him in jail for the rest of his life.
Well, and especially during an election year, I think that the Biden administration is in a very precarious position right now. Their approval rating is in the toilet. They have the situation happening now in Gaza, which has caused a worldwide eruption of backlash and protest against that. And I think that they are desperate for some kind of a PR boost, some kind of a win. I think we do need to be very skeptical about this potential rumored offer. Again, these are anonymous sources. We don't know for sure exactly what's been offered or any of that stuff. So I think we need to be incredibly skeptical. There is a possibility here here that they're just floating this out there in the public to either make the Assange legal team comment on it. And if they decide that it's not acceptable, that then makes it look like it's his fault that he remains in prison, and it kind of relieves them of that responsibility. And it could also just be that they are trying to get some kind of PR win where it looks as if they're being more reasonable on this issue.
But good. I mean, any talks are good talks, right? I mean, I've always been, as a journalist and, you know, somebody who's watched these kinds of things in the past, anytime you have two people in a room talking, you're more apt to get some kind of solution. Don't you agree?
For sure. Yeah, no. I think for sure that the talks are good. I think that anytime that there's dialogue that's taking place, I think we need to be mindful of the intention behind them, what the game is that they're playing. And also, if Assange does take any kind of a plea deal, and listen, I'm not saying that he shouldn't. The man has been subjected to psychological torture for over a decade. His health is failing. If it is what he feels is in his best interest and his family, I am in no position to judge him for doing that. But the implications on the future of press freedom are there, and we need to be mindful of that.
Dan, do you think... I'm going to hit you with the same question I asked Misty, because I'm getting a sense that right now our government, this place we call the United States of America, is kind of in a weakened state in terms of how the rest of the world, and especially anybody under the age of like 45, sees us because of Ukraine, because of Gaza, because of so many things that are going on, and because of Assange. Are those the things that are moving perhaps this conversation to this, we hope, fruition?
I think so, yes. I think they have to all be seen as one bundle. I think the Gaza protests have chastened Biden. You know, he's now being called Genocide Joe.
Yeah.
The idea of Julian Assange showing up on an airplane in handcuffs into the United States would not be a good look for the president at this time. The other thing that wouldn't be a good look, and I've said this for years, and it's why they've tried to really string this along, this extradition, is that, you know, if this goes to trial, Julian Assange will be able to call all kinds of former, you know, bigwigs from the government, you know, department, you know, heads of the Department of State.
And wait, that video I just showed, just to make my point about what he did that was so wrong, videos like that, disclaimers like that, that'll be out there every day for people to look at.
Yes. So they don't want this trial, you know, and again, Biden doesn't want the optics of Assange being extradited here. So I think all these protests that are happening, mostly focused right now on Palestine, are having impacts on stuff like Julian Assange, which is all to the good, of course.
Well, you know what? Here's what I'm going to do. When we come back, you guys stick around, because when we come back, I want to talk about something that also has to do with the First Amendment. In particular, the U.S. Supreme Court questioning freedom of speech. Let me say that again. The folks who are supposed to defend the Constitution are questioning the First Amendment of the Constitution. We're going to talk about that when we come back.
North Ossetia, in the Caucasus Mountains, where beautiful people have been coming together to celebrate ancient traditions since the beginning of time itself, where everything has a special symbolic meaning. I'm Sean Thomas, this is Inland Visions, and today we are discovering the world of Ossetian culture.
Каждой аварии, у каждой ошибки, у каждой катастрофы обязательно есть фамилия, имя и отчество.
Greater Finland to the Urals, the Nazi theory of racial superiority Finnish style. 4 years of Karelian SSR occupation, 14 concentration camps, 34 prisoner of war labor camps, 10 prisons.
В Карелии был геноцид против русского народа в чистом виде. Они все население поделили на две части: привилегированное карело-финское население и русское население.
Approximately 25,000 people went through the archipelago of Finnish camps, according to official figures.
Здесь был штаб, там были ворота. Это вся территория лагеря.
Мария, наша сестра, Надя Ростовцева, Генка Костромин. Я вот.
Famine, disease, forced labor, torture by the wardens.
Трупы умерших вывозили на подводах 2-3 раза в неделю. От 25 до 30 гробов за один раз.
Мы до сих пор не знаем точные цифры погибших вообще на территории Карелии, даже Петрозаводского концлагеря.
Thousands of testimonies of crimes and the impunity of criminals.
Нас голыми выгоняли на улицу, садились перед нами надзиратели и фотографировались на память. Это писали люди, которые были там. Это свидетельские показания. И подтверждение того, что это было.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. So let's stay with the First Amendment, because if you defend the First Amendment, you almost have to defend Julian Assange, right? You have to. But is our understanding and our appreciation of the First Amendment dwindling somewhat? You'd say in the case of Assange, it probably is. Why would journalists not be coming to his defense like so many aren't? Is it being questioned also by the very people whose job it is to protect it? Actually, yeah, it is. As a matter of fact, just this week, the Supreme Court, whose job it is to interpret, in essence, really defend the Constitution of the United States of America, actually made some comments, a couple of them, one in particular, made some comments that seemed to suggest that maybe it doesn't think all that much of the First Amendment. Maybe it's not so important after all, you know? They were hearing a case on whether the government, the Biden administration in this particular case, has the right to make media companies take down information that it thinks is dangerous or doesn't agree with it. Take COVID, for example. Can people post negatively about vaccinations because they don't believe in them? Or should the government have a right to go in there and say, nope, can't do that, have a right to prevent them from doing so for the public good? Here's Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, member of the U.S. Supreme Court, seeming to suggest that maybe we ought to push freedom of speech aside in some cases.
So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods. I mean, what would you have the government do? I've heard you say a couple times that the government can post its own speech, but in my hypothetical, you know, kids, this is not safe, don't do it, is not going to get it done.
I was truly taken aback. Then again, I'm a journalist. I've been trained as a journalist. I went to school at the University of Minnesota, the Eric Severide School of Journalism, to study journalism. The First Amendment is ingrained in my sinew. And when I heard her say that, my jaw dropped. Dan, lawyer, to you.
Yeah, it's very concerning. And of course, it has to be noted, this is a liberal appointee, right?
Yeah.
This is a liberal member of justice. But, you know, here's the sad part, is that many liberals have become very illiberal, especially during COVID. A lot of liberals seem to back the idea of censorship during COVID. You know, they didn't want to hear people talk critically about vaccines and masking and that sort of thing. And, you know, that was very disturbing to me, you know, during a time we needed very robust debate over these things and over lockdowns, we didn't get them. And there was a lot of suppression of speech. And again, ironically, it was the liberals pushing it, you know, and now you have the ACLU, which frankly isn't that even interested in free speech anymore. So who's going to watch the watchman? This is a very disturbing thing, as you mentioned.
Yeah, that's why it does. Wouldn't you say that, you know, when we think about these things, I think, Misty, we were taught, I don't know if you have the same background as I do, but as a journalist, no means no. It's an absolute protection that we have in the Constitution. It says government shall make no law. Let me say that again. Government shall make no law. What I heard Justice Catani seeming to, Jackson seeming to say is, occasionally government can make a law. Isn't that what you heard?
Yes, maybe a little law here and there as a treat. It's absurd, right? Like, this is so ridiculous on every level. And you're right. I think that this obviously stems from the COVID situation, and that's what they want to censor. But we've seen over the course of the past 3-4 years now that the so-called authoritative sources were almost always the ones who were wrong, almost always the ones who were posting the misinformation. It's safe and effective. Remember, it was 90% effective. Then it was 80% effective. Then it was 60% effective. And then suddenly it's not effective really at mm-hmm. all at stopping transmission. So, the idea that we have a Supreme Court justice arguing for basically the dissemination or the decimation of the First Amendment, it really just kind of blows my mind that that's the level where we're at right now.
Have you thought about this, though, Misty, that maybe it is different? Does she have a case to be made when it comes to social media as opposed to legacy media? Have you thought that through? How are they different? What should you not be allowed to do, for example, on Twitter, that maybe you can do if you're, I don't know, I'll say this because we were talking about it during the break, if you're Don Lemon on CNN, for example.
I don't think that there is any difference. And again, frankly, like I just said, it was the legacy media that got it wrong. And that usually does. And frankly, that usually lied to us. I mean, how many lies or how many wars have they lied us into? How many situations? I mean, there's no question about it. The legacy media has been completely corrupted. So it is oftentimes them that is telling us the lies, that is misinforming us most of the time on purpose. So I think that there really is no substantive difference when it comes to the First Amendment.
Well, let me try one more time with you then on this, Dan. I'm going to try and defend her argument, all right, since I'm disagreeing with her, I want to defend her in this case. What about the possibility where they would say a bunch of bad people get together on Twitter or on, TikTok or something, and they all try to convince us of something that's not true, and they lie to us, and they tell us, I don't know, something about the vaccinations or something about China or something about anything else, and that we have protected ourselves from these evil people? You say what?
I think the idea has always been that truth will out. That if you allow people to have free discussion, that's how the best result will come about. And I agree with that. Yes, there's always room for manipulation. But as Misty says, it's often being done by the mainstream media, by the legacy media.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. By the way, I want to bring in something else now. I want to go to Cuba. This week, there were several demonstrations in Cuba. People there took to the streets once again to complain about hunger, electricity cuts, and a generally, if not eternal, depressed economy there on the island, which, of course, many of them blame on their own government. But then the president of Cuba, speaking of government, Miguel Diaz de Canal, who is not a media hungry like his predecessors, the Castro brothers, were, did take to the airwaves. He talks to an NBC News reporter who's on the island, and he addresses this very topic.
Y dándole la vuelta a las cosas. Lo más absurdo es que nos hayan aplicado un bloqueo criminal durante más de 65 años. Eso es lo absurdo. Y esa, la absurdidad de ese bloqueo es la que ha provocado todas las otras reacciones de las cosas que pasan.
It's interesting. According to President Diaz-Canel, what Cuba is continuing to suffer through are the consequences of the U.S. government's heavy hand. He says the U.S. State Department has been interfering in Cuban affairs for 60 years and uses its leverage and its embargo to do everything possible to hurt the Cuban economy. One thing is certain, by the way, which the president is right about. The U.S., at least politically, seems to benefit from a weakened Cuba to guarantee political victories, especially in the state of Florida. So one does wonder, whose fault is that? Speaking of U.S. interference, let me add another point here. As tensions rise with China, Taiwan's defense minister has, for the first time, hinted that U.S. troops, boots on the ground, have been training on the Taiwanese with the Taiwanese military on some of their outlying islands out there. The defense minister didn't offer details of the U.S. deployment, but he seemed to be talking about the outlying islands of Kinmen, which are only 3 miles from the Chinese coast. His comments mark a rare acknowledgement by Taiwan confirming that U.S. troops are on its territory. Misty, let me begin with you. There seems to be enough cases out there, even today, old case like Cuba, new case like Taiwan, like our government and our sense or need for hegemony has a tendency to want to go to places and interfere in the affairs of those governments. Is this plain to you, and should it be to the rest of Americans?
Oh, it really should be. It's not going to be because, again, legacy media does not tell those stories. And so the vast majority of the American public is fully unaware of what their government is doing on any given day. I mean, we're seeing it right now in Ukraine. The 2014 Maidan coup, that's exactly how we got to the situation where we're at now in Ukraine. So I think that it is our MO. It's something that we've been doing for decades. So nobody should be surprised by it. But unfortunately, we have a very misinformed American populace that is unaware of and lied to. Again, they are misdirected and lied to, and this will be blamed on China. And our role in it will certainly be left out of that conversation.
Do you see some, Dan, do you see some similarities between the situation in Cuba and the situation that we're now talking about that I learned about this morning in Taiwan, where we're sending troops there to train the Taiwan military against China?
Yes, I mean, of course. I mean, basically, the U.S., you know, decided some time ago that it has the right to intervene anywhere in the world at any time for its own perceived interest, that it has, you know, sole dominion over the world. You know, the fact, you know, they'll complain that China, for example, is made, you know, engaged in maneuvers in the South China Sea. Well, it is called the South China Sea, right? Or that the, you know, the Persians of Iran are doing something in the Persian Gulf. Well, it is the Persian Gulf. But the U.S., you know, it presumes that it has the right to intervene anywhere at any time. And it's destroying America. You know, I think it was in 1905, the Democratic Party platform said something to the effect that the United States cannot continue one half republic and one half empire. That a republic like that will fall. And it is falling because of that.
President Monroe, he liked that. I'm not sure it works today. My thanks to both of you, Dan, Misty. What a great conversation. You guys are fantastic guests. And this has really been a smart conversation. I hope our viewers enjoyed it as much as I did. Before we go, I do want to let you know that we have a mission here to try and talk about these things out in the open. Simple, really. I want to de-silo the world. We've got to stop living in these little boxes where only it's over here, over there, or I only talk to the people I agree with or agree with me. Truths don't live in boxes. Truths are everywhere. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'll be looking for you again right here, where I hope to provide a direct impact.